I had a friend who was trying to figure out a workaround. No matter what my friend did, it seemed they could never please the boss. Ever felt that way? Got to be so frustrating, they felt trapped, boxed in. Why not avoid this problem altogether, this person? Just avoid them altogether. But the relationship at work started to go from bad to worse. My friend felt trapped, boxed in. That's when someone asked them a question they hadn't deeply considered before. Have you tried turning to God yet? Hey there, and welcome to Sentinel Watch, where we look at life through a spiritual lens. I'm David Brown. In the case of my friend, a prayerful approach dissolved that feeling of being trapped, and not just that. It transformed the relationship with the boss permanently, and she didn't have to leave her job to find freedom. I'm sure our guest today has seen this sort of thing before. Nicole Virgil is a Christian Science practitioner from Elmhurst, Illinois. Nicole, welcome to Sentinel Watch.
Hey there, David. Nice to be here.
It's very nice to have you. You know, I think one of the ways people can feel trapped is by thinking there's no way out, or maybe you see a way out, but you don't know how to get there. You know, like my friend thought, I'm just going to have to find a new gig. Have you had experiences like this where you're trying to find freedom? How do you even begin to think about turning to God? What does that mean in Christian Science?
Well, I think freedom is tied to obedience and practice in a way that is not necessarily always obvious to people. Certainly in real time, we all have the opportunity to witness our freedom, to be sure. There's no question about that. You don't need to have a degree or a certain amount of study. However, it's also true that when we follow a practice, a set of principles, or daily study, or like if you're a musician, you practice an instrument daily. When it comes time to do the performance, you're really free to let loose and play. And so that ongoing sort of daily, some people might think of it as mundane, you know, in the world of music, if you're practicing scales or technical facility, when it comes time to give the performance, it's really that obedience to the daily practice that confers freedom.
I love what you're saying there about the daily practice, because sometimes people have asked me, and I've mentioned this before, they've said, Christian Science? What does that even mean? That doesn't seem to go together, you know, for a lot of people. But what you're really talking about is your approach is scientific, that there are principles, spiritual principles, that Mary Baker Eddy, who discovered Christian Science, explains in Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures. These are principles one can practice and apply in everyday life, right?
Yeah, that's certainly the case. Just like I was mentioning before with those who are endeavoring to perform in a musical setting, Christian Science reveals what a lot of us refer to as daily work. It's really just daily prayer. A lot of Christians are involved in daily devotionals or Bible study of some sort. The thing that's unique about Christian Science is that the daily work prescribed for the Christian Scientist is specifically calibrated to do at least two things, a lot more, but I'll just name two here. First, the daily work, as taught by Mary Baker Eddy, protects the individual Christian Scientist from being pulled along with worldly or materialistic beliefs, which may appear to be productive or useful, but are actually contrary to developing a relationship to God. That daily work will accomplish that if done systematically and rigorously. But secondly, this daily work prepares the individual Christian Scientist to fulfill the mission of the Christian Science Church, which is to heal in the community and elevate the race through this Christian healing that Jesus asked all his disciples to do, starting with healing the sick and the sinning.
Could you say more about that systematic approach? There may be some listeners who have not studied Christian Science, so they may be new to it or finding out about it or just learning more. And to hear you talk about a specific approach that Mrs. Eddy recommended, I think sometimes might be misinterpreted as, you know, there is one specific way to pray. What are you referring to here when you're talking about this approach that Mrs. Eddy suggested?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of different ways to pray. I'd say since God is infinite, there's an infinite number of ways to commune with God. But this daily work, this is the foundational work. Like again, with a musician who starts off their daily practice with scales, that's not all of what they do, but it's the foundation of what they do. The structure of the Christian Science Church is elucidated in our church manual. And the church manual has bylaws, which constitute the framework for practice for all who are members of the church. And in this manual, Mrs. Eddy does list a few things that should be systematically considered deeply and pondered and followed throughout the day. And in addition to that, she's established the daily Bible lesson and some specific other things, which you can actually find very easily by looking up in a concordance. If you look up the word daily.
You know, there's part of this that makes me sort of chuckle inside because, you know, I grew up in a Christian Science Sunday school. And over the years, I think I just kind of lost the plot in more ways than one. But I had forgotten about something that I needed to do foundationally. And I'll just say it right now, and you'll know what it is. You'll be able to identify it right away. Thy kingdom come. Let the reign of divine truth, life, and love be established in me, and rule out of me all sin, and may thy word enrich the affections of all mankind and govern them. You know what I'm referring to there?
Yeah, that's one of those bylaws that I was talking about in the church manual, which she requires all members of the church to pray and consider deeply on a daily basis.
The daily prayer. And I think this gets back to your bigger message and something that I have not, over the years, really taken to heart, and that is to bring together these ideas of freedom and obedience, because I think they can seem sometimes at odds. Obedience almost seems like, you know, you're being told what you must do. Freedom seems like the opposite sometimes, right? I don't want to be told what I have to do. I want to be free.
Right.
You know what
I mean? That's very often the perspective. There's a spirit of rebellion, which is often felt or voiced. And the Bible would call that the voice of the carnal mind, or that which resists the Christ activity. But actually, all freedom has to be achieved by yielding to authority. You know, I talk to teenagers sometimes, starting with my own teenagers, thinking about Michael Jordan, who's got to be one of the most famous basketball players of all time, right? And so they relate to going to basketball games at their high school, where they have the JV teams and they have the varsity teams. And so they understand that you advance. And what is it that makes you advance? Well, practice. And how is it that you know how to practice? Well, you have a coach that tells you what to do and you have to run the drills. And everybody sort of understands that. And so I ask them, what do you think about a team that would have Michael Jordan come in and be the coach for a day or two? What if he came in and you were on that team? Would you do what he asked you to do if you wanted to play basketball at peak performance? Oh, yeah, they say, certainly. We would do whatever Michael Jordan told us to do. Well, why? Why would you do whatever he told you to do? Well, because he's proven that he knows a lot about basketball. Well, it's the biblical standard that we shall know them by their fruits. Michael Jordan's demonstrated a whole lot of fruit in the realm of basketball. And so he has the authority to say this is what needs to be done based on his demonstration that he knows what he's saying. It's not just a lot of words. He's proven it, right? This is the biblical standard for authority. Ye shall know them by their fruits. Mary Baker Eddy certainly demonstrated that she understands divine principle, another term for God, the principle which undergirds the Christian healing, which is what elevates the race and shows people that they can turn away from materiality and depend on their relationship with spirit. That's what makes them free of the limitations of a material way of thinking. But first, they have to be able to trust that there's something useful there in a relationship with spirit. And the human mind's not really inclined towards that sort of trust. And that's what healing does in Christian Science. It sort of wakes people up to the fact that there's something else. But the only way that Christian scientists can practice this healing is if they submit to the authority of those who have demonstrated that they know how to do the healing. And this by itself, I like to add, is not totally sufficient on its own. Hmm. You'll notice where anybody really excels in an area, like Michael Jordan did, it's not just that they check the boxes. They don't just do the drill and, you know, turn tail and run.
Right.
They come early and they stay late because they love what they're doing. So I like to say it's the and then some approach. That's actually how Michael Jordan started his career. He actually got kicked off his high school team, but he went back and did what he was told and then some. And it's that spirit of not just minimal compliance, but diligent and sort of cup runneth over desire to obey what they're given and then some, that is always found in the story of those who excel in their field, whether it be music or sports or Christian Science.
I love how you put that. And as you were talking about, you know, Michael Jordan, I thought, well, in the context of Christian Science, of course, we can look to Jesus's healings. I mean, talk about a champion. I mean, the things that he did have echoed through the ages. And yet sometimes I think people turn to the person. You made reference to the Christ earlier. And I'm wondering if you can say more about that.
Well, Jesus, as taught in Christian Science, is the name of the man that everybody thinks of who walked this earth, who had disciples, the Son of Mary. But he was given the divine title, the Christ, which was representative of his immediate connection to God. The Christ is that which is coming to consciousness to destroy misunderstandings, to destroy sin, disease, and death, materiality, anything erroneous that would cause suffering. Jesus had such an intimate relationship with the Christ that he was called Jesus Christ, literally. Mm-hmm. This Christ, however, it's not contained by an individual. The Christ is more like the truth. Anybody can speak the truth, but the truth is not contained in one person.
And that truth is present today, too, we should note. It's not something that's entombed in words in a book. This is alive now.
Right, right. And so our opportunity is to demonstrate that we can hear the Christ because we are the children of God and we hear the truth coming to us from God continuously. And so this is what's involved in Christian Science practice. It's not something irregular or special. I mean, it is special to demonstrate that you're at one with God, but it's not something that's rare, is what I'm saying. This is going on daily in the life of a Christian Scientist, whether it's for personal or professional adjustments that are needed or physical or financial. I'm thinking right now of a time when I was auditioning. One of the reasons I was talking about music is because I am a musician. Hmm. And at a time when I was trying to figure out which music school I would want to apply to, I narrowed it down to several, maybe four or five, but then you had to go do auditions for these institutions. And I want to say I didn't suffer from any performance or much performance anxiety. Uh-huh. If I did, it wasn't memorable,
right.
Not significantly. But when it came time to audition for conservatories, it felt like there was higher stakes, that it was more tense. There was a lot on the line. It felt like that way to me anyway.
Yeah.
So when it came time to audition at one particular university, I could feel myself starting to have all these just really bad physical symptoms. It was minutes before I was going to go onto the stage to audition, and I was getting dizzy, and my breathing was really shallow. And, you know, my palms were getting sweaty and my face was getting sweaty and I just couldn't really settle. And this was the first time I had ever had anything quite that aggressive where I felt just not really able to breathe deeply. And I was going to audition for a spot as a singer. You can't sing at all if you can't breathe. So
yeah.
I was really nervous and I didn't have a whole lot of time for thinking of a remedy. But what I did have was years of reliance on God, as taught in my Christian Science Sunday school, I had been taught to rely on God in difficult situations over and over again. There's a certain passage that I have in my back pocket, which came to me at that time. Mrs. Eddy writes in Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures, she says, "If the student adheres strictly to the teachings of Christian Science and ventures not to break its rules, he cannot fail of success in healing." And that strict adherence to the teachings, that's that obedience that I was talking about. And I love the promise here that with obedience, you cannot fail, meaning you're free to succeed, right? And so I knew that. That was what was in my back pocket. So I knew that my motive was right for going to this audition. I knew that I was seeking good and that the glory of my singing was all to God. I knew that it wasn't ego-driven, and I had all good motives, and I was pure of heart. And so then I didn't need to suffer, and I didn't have to be subject to performance anxiety or stress or any kind of concern in that regard. And so on that basis, on that principle, that because I'm the child of God and had been living in strict obedience to the teachings of Christian Science, that I could not fail to be free, I could not fail to experience healing, I was then still. And remember, I didn't have a lot of time, so I'm taking probably longer to tell it than it took to happen, but I was still, and I got this message. This message was coming to me from the Christ, the truth. This is the sort of activity of the Christ I was talking about before, the truth that comes to human consciousness to destroy error or evil beliefs. And as I was listening, I just got a very simple message. The message was, it's your turn. If it was someone else's turn, they'd go up on stage. But right now, it's your turn. It was a very practical message, and it just meant to me that I was worthy to go up there. I didn't need to have self-doubt. It was my turn. And that didn't mean logistically my turn, like it's 2 o'clock. It meant to me, this is your time. You've taken the steps. You've been obedient to your musical training, and you've been obedient to the spiritual training taught by Christ Jesus. It's time to go express. And when I understood that the obedience had been in place, both musically and in Christian Science, and Mrs. Eddy's promise here in the textbook that if you adhere strictly to the teachings, you cannot fail. With that understanding, I took the stage, I understood it was my turn, and I was free to sing and shine to the glory of God. And now that opportunity was lovely, and I was not in any way impeded by performance anxiety at that audition. But the cooler thing was, I was never a victim of performance anxiety ever again.
Wow.
That was not a situational healing. That was a lifetime healing, because I graduated to a higher perspective of my relationship to God, and I no longer believed that I had to suffer for that.
What a wonderful experience. How did the audition go overall? Did you end up attending that school or what?
I did not attend that conservatory. I wound up going to a different one, but I passed all my auditions
That's great.
At all the different conservatories. So I was not limited in that regard either, and I was free to choose. And I was so grateful to have that broad of an opportunity to select. So I went to God when it was time to pick. Once I saw that I had been accepted, I went to God and said, well, I'm not going to make this decision. You tell me where to go, Father, and I'll go where you send me, right? Because that, again, is the obedient thing to do. Not my will, but thine be done. And he gave me a great choice.
What a wonderful experience. And thank you for sharing it. That was really wonderful. I hope this doesn't sound impertinent, but I'm thinking that someone listening to you may think, okay, well, what does that mean for me? I mean, do you have to have lived in strict obedience to God up to that point when you're seeking a healing? Do you have to know the rules? Are you left out if you don't? What would you tell them?
Well, I would say that, of course, it's a good idea to brush your teeth every day. Right? But if you haven't brushed your teeth up until this point, the best thing to do would be to start now. Because the point of healing in Christian Science is not where you've been. It's, are you willing to be moved today by the Spirit of the Lord? Are you willing to be moved today by the authority of God's law? Now is the time. We're not looking backwards. Christian Science is all about now. So you can obey now because the Bible tells us that God's law is written in everybody's heart. Even people who've never seen a Bible, they have spiritual intuition. They have what Christian Science refers to as spiritual sense. You can intuit the truth simply by being still and listening for your highest sense of right. That's not because of a doctrinal position or a creed or a ritual of some sort. Mm-hmm. This has to do with the science of being. This is just how it is. You were created to hear God. We all were. I love the story of Frederick Douglass, for example. He was born into slavery in the United States at a time when slavery was legal, and he was not allowed to learn how to read. No black people were at the time, but he says in his autobiographies, he eventually became a great author and speaker, he says that he knew he was free from the time he was a little boy. And a lot of people know that story, but they don't ask, how on earth could he have known he was free? He couldn't read, and his family didn't believe he was free, and the law didn't believe he was free, and nobody around him believed he was free. How on earth he could know something that nobody else believed and wasn't written down anywhere or expressed? He knew it because he could hear this Christ truth coming to him direct from God because he has spiritual sense, just like everybody else did. So he knew intuitively at a very deep level that he was the child of God and couldn't possibly be property, which is what everybody around him was saying was true. Mm-hmm. But he knew it wasn't. Now, that might sound like something just nice and warm and fuzzy, you know, like that's nice, pat you on the head. What good is it, practically speaking? Well, the good is that Jesus said, you shall know the truth and the truth shall set you free. And Frederick knew it enough that he walked right out of slavery. And Frederick's not alone. Of course, lots of people knew that truth and they found their way to freedom on that basis. We just have a lot of history from Frederick because he wrote a lot about his thoughts. But everybody can know the truth in real time. You see, you don't have to have had a 30-year history or a 30-minute history. You can know the truth right now. It's like if you didn't know mathematics, you could still see and awake to the fact that 5 plus 5 is 10. And as soon as you see it, it's actionable.
That's wonderful. I love what you're talking about when you're describing Frederick Douglass's insight. You know, it reminds me of something from, I believe it's the book of Acts, where Paul is being wrongly accused and this Roman chief captain comes in, right, trying to find out what's going on. And he asks Paul if he's a Roman. And Paul says, yeah. And the chief captain says, with a great sum, I obtained this freedom. And Paul says, but I was freeborn.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And in a way, he's speaking for all of us, mm-hmm. even today. And that was sort of what Douglass was tapping into there. But I want to push this a little more, because I think sometimes people can think in small ways we can find freedom. But when it comes to the big things, someone's locked behind bars. Maybe someone listening is doing time. How are they going to find freedom?
Well, the mechanism or the divine principle is singular. So properly stated in Christian Science, there is one principle. It's divine principle, and that is God. And so to the degree that we yield to God's authority and our thinking patterns the divine, we can't predict what the specific outcome. You mentioned Paul, for example. Well, the walls came tumbling down in his case. You know, you could be unjustly imprisoned and be let go. But the power of God is infinite. It's not to be prescribed or you're not going to have blueprints for exactly how it's going to work out. But you do know the nature of the principle per the Bible's teachings. We know that divine principle is good. We know that divine principle God is always supporting man in right activity and supports man's freedom and justice. We know that divine principle is available to everyone all the time, so it's universal. these facts are in evidence and have been demonstrated. You know, Christian Science is not just Christian. It's also scientific, meaning a scientist has to go into the laboratory and work out the principle, right? So this divine principle, God, has been demonstrated in the lives of millions of people. It's not an open question. We know that divine principle protects and governs man in many different ways. I'm thinking right off the top of my head about Daniel, when something corrupt and unjust was going on with him and a corrupt government made a law to get him in trouble when he wasn't doing anything wrong and threatened him with being thrown in the lion's den. And then they followed through on it. And yet, divine principle, which Daniel had been obedient to, right? Daniel had been practicing praying to God 3 times a day and living his life both mentally and practically in accordance with God's laws, such that even though he was put in the lion's den, God shut the lion's mouths, meaning divine principle would not allow any harm to come to him, even though the government was unjustly putting him in prison. I don't think anybody could have anticipated that working out, right? That's a unique situation in how it was worked out, but it was worked out according to divine principle, meaning Daniel was obedient. The obedience to divine principle protects and governs man. That's divine law. And it was worked out in that situation where he was protected not only from the lions, but the next day when he was unscathed, the king abolished the law and announced that the God that Daniel was praying to was actually the real God and they should get rid of these silly human laws. So again, it wasn't just a situational triumph. It became a benefit for the whole kingdom. And that's usually how things go when we're obedient. We don't just get a blessing for ourselves. What blesses one blesses all. That's the nature of Christian Science practice.
You know, there are a lot of people who may feel they are stuck in bad relationships. Maybe thinking divorce is the only way out. Maybe they're thinking that the other person in this relationship isn't a Christian Scientist and you're doing all the praying here. Then what? What is it that's happening with Christian Science when you're praying that brings about that healing? Is there a way of articulating that and maybe giving some direction to people who may be struggling right now with that sense of entrapment?
Well, Mrs. Eddy's discovery of Christian Science revealed that the things that appear to be physical problems or even relational problems or financial problems, they're actually mental in nature. So that's why prayer is an effective method of dealing with any type of human struggle or difficulty, because as it turns out, in spite of what the material senses report, any struggle or difficulty that a person is having in the human experience is actually based on a mental misperception of one's relationship with God. So this could be a relational issue like marriage. It could be any particular issue. But at the root of it is going to be some misunderstanding about one's relationship to God and therefore the rest of creation or one's own spiritual identity as a spiritual child of God in a harmonious spiritual creation. So getting the right idea, what does God actually say about creation? What is God doing? What is the nature of God? If God is all good, like produces like, so his creation has to be good, and I'm part of his creation, so I have to be good, and sort of setting the table with these foundational truths, it's like a factory reset. It resets human consciousness to a baseline of harmony, which is the nature of this divine principle, is harmonious. And when your mental disposition is reset to a basis of harmony, you are able to witness reality as created by God. The healing in this case is moving from a less material mindset or point of view mm-hmm. to a more accurate or spiritually authentic point of view about what reality is. It's not actually changing reality. God's cool at his job. He knows what he's doing. He's created everything good. Right. And so God doesn't need our help to establish or maintain creation. Our work is to witness what God has already done. And so the Christian Science demonstration, whether in the case of divorce or disease, is to allow our thinking to be moved by the Christ truth to a higher, more accurate view of what already is. This movement of thought is the prayerful activity which neutralizes the lie, the erroneous belief, with the truth. Everybody's had situations where they've been believing something that wasn't true, and then they shifted, and very often they'll say, oh, I see, oh, I get it, or I have a better idea, right? That's representative of their thought moving from a lower position of thought to a higher position of thought, something more accurate where you're going to be able to see solutions. Now, sometimes that solution will be divorce. Sometimes that solution will be a restructuring or a different perspective within the context of marriage. I couldn't say what the specific outcome would be in every individual case. What I know is it's divine principle that affects the change, and the change is mental in spite of the fact that it may look situational, relational, or physical. Actually, everything is mental movement that results in healing.
You're moving from a perspective of us being governed by material laws to our spiritual identity, spiritual laws.
Yes, that's right.
We've talked about how, you know, you overcame that feeling of stage fright and the anxiety, but I'm wondering, in physical healing, can you give an example of a situation where someone may feel trapped by sickness, for example?
Mary Baker Eddy's discovery is so revolutionary because she's the only one to have stated outright that everything real is spirit and its creation. This is a revolutionary thing to say. Most everybody else thinks that either everything is material or that it's like 50-50, half material and half spiritual. The basis of Christian Science is that no, actually all of creation is 100% spiritual. So regardless of the problem, whatever appears to be the problem, it can present as physical, emotional, relational, financial. It's all actually a perspective or a belief that needs correction. Even though the individual might think it's a physical challenge, like in the case when I just mentioned about me sweating and my heart racing and being dizzy, well, most people would say those are physical symptoms or material physiological symptoms caused by chemistry or stress. Whereas Christian Science would say it's based on the idea that I was separated from my source of good. I was worried about the potential of something bad happening, which is corrected by understanding that God is good and there is no other power besides good God. And once the lie is corrected with the truth, the physical symptoms disappear because the physical symptoms weren't actually physical symptoms. They were projection of a lie. So a woman called me once having thrown her back out in the backyard doing some yard work, and she was now unable to move and in great pain. And she called very much, strongly articulating that she had a physical problem and a painful one at that, and she needed help immediately. And any type of case where the material senses are reporting aggressive and specific details, it's very easy to get caught up in the story of what the material senses are promoting. You know, it could be a disease picture, or it could even just be like a dramatic picture. You can get easily sucked into the picture of what the material senses are reporting. Mm-hmm. And so she was telling me about specifically what had happened and specifically how much it hurt and specifically how she couldn't move and all the terrible sort of proof to her that there was a problem. But Christian Science doesn't work the problem. We don't start from a material standpoint because the whole basis of Christian Science is that all is spirit. So we're not particularly interested in starting our work with the evidence collected from the material senses. We're trying to start with spiritual sense. What does God say about it? And usually this is easily accomplished if you can sort of wake someone up. I call it like putting your head in a freezer, you know, that feeling you have where you just kind of wake yourself up really fresh. And she was talking about, you know, how she had lifted this heavy thing or done so much work. She was doing good stuff, but, you know, her body was getting old and tired and she must not be up to it anymore. And I was listening to God to hear from spiritual sense. I was trying to get a sense of what is God telling me about his creation? What's real? What's the Christ truth sending me about this situation? And so I got a sense from the Christ that I could use just a little bit of humor here. And I spoke to her with just a spiritual intuition, not so much a strategy, if you will. I wasn't trying to think, what would I say at this moment to dislodge an error from her thinking? It's not quite that mechanical or human. This is the inspiration of the Christ leading both her and me to witness what God is seeing about her. And so I just kind of joked with her by saying something along the lines of, well, what do you think you got feet for but to walk? And what do you think you got arms for but to rake? And what do you think you got a back for but to stand? Right? All the elements that are given to us are to live, to move, to breathe, to do. We are not created to be purposeless. All the children of God have a purpose in his creation, spiritually speaking. And spiritually speaking is the only way that we're going to speak, because spirit is all. And so, of course, she has everything she needs to do all the productive things that she needs to do. And so there's no counterfact to that. God has enabled her to do righteous activity, full stop. And that kind of was like her sticking her head in the freezer moment. She was like, oh, see, there had been this erroneous belief that needed correcting, that she was given a life which could be used for good, but it could accidentally be used for evil. Well, that's a mortal concept of living. That's not the right concept. And what I was challenging her on was, no, you've been given life as a child of God to do good. Full stop. There's no other purpose. There's no other capacity. And so that erroneous belief of good and evil being potential in her life was rejected. And she literally stood up, healed. She was done. There was no recovery time. There was no, you know, taking it easy. She was just free of that belief that she was susceptible to harm. And once that belief had been properly challenged, the symptoms went with it.
Nicole Virgil is a Christian Science practitioner from Elmhurst, Illinois. Nicole, you've given me so much to work with here. Thank you so much for taking time to talk with us on Sentinel Watch. This has been really wonderful.
Thanks so much for having me.
Sentinel Watch is a production of the Christian Science Sentinel. I'm David Brown. The podcast is produced by Carlos Machado, Sophie Ungerleiter, and our executive producer, Amy Richman. Our editor is Ethel Baker. Our audio engineers are Tim Malone, Noel Flatt, Alyssa Britton, and Jeff Turton. Our theme music is by Jonah Bobo. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll talk again soon.
This podcast is produced and copyrighted by the Christian Science Publishing Society.